This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And as the great, some sarcasm in there, Ben Stained once sang, it's been a while. And it has been a while since we've done a Drop in Dimes podcast here on theyak.com. I worked on that for about 5 minutes before turning on this microphone and hitting record. It was probably a bad idea, but here we are. This is episode 50. The last time I did one of these was way back in, when was that? And, you know, things get mixed up in pandemic time. It was right around the time David Joplin had just committed to the University of Texas. Of course, David Joplin, a forward that was part of a four-man signing class that was just announced yesterday on Wednesday. We'll get into that a little bit more here on this podcast. But basketball season is, it's right around the corner, ready or not. It's coming, at least I think it's coming. I've already seen some programs that have been forced to scrap their season opener. I think it was the University of Miami had to postpone its game against Stetson because Stetson had a positive COVID-19 test in its program. And I'm crossing my fingers. I just don't know what this season's going to look like, especially with the way cases are rising around the country. But we're going to try to keep this podcast optimistic and talk about the actual program, the roster, a recent Zoom press conference with Shaka Smart, the signing class as well. I'm not going to allow myself to get pessimistic about the, you know, these tournaments that require a lot of traveling, like Texas is going to do to the Maui Invitational held in Asheville, North Carolina this season. But yeah, it has been a while, and it won't be a while until Texas is on the court for its season opener Wednesday, November 25th against UTRGV. With the way the schedules had to be adjusted in college basketball, with the reduction of games, Texas is scheduled to play a 27-game schedule. And with those non-tournament games before Big 12 play, you shouldn't be surprised to see a bunch of regional programs. They really wanted to try to bring in teams that wouldn't have to travel that much. Busing would be the ideal thing. So I think that's why you see UTRGV, Texas State, Sam Houston State, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi. The full schedule is posted online at texassports.com. So that's what the schedule is going to be. It's going to be loaded in the Big 12, loaded if the Maui-Asheville Invitational happens. And then the Big East, Big 12, Big East, what are they calling it? Challenge, matchup, whatever it is. Texas will actually be hosting Villanova in that game, who I believe was preseason number 3. In the rankings that were just released. And then in the Big 12 SEC Challenge, Texas will take a trip to Kentucky and play in Rupp Arena against the top 10 Kentucky Wildcats. So it's a loaded schedule. It's a loaded schedule with two big-time marquee matchups, some potential really good matchups in the Maui Invitational in Asheville, and then the Big East matchup game against Villanova. So fortunately for Shaka Smart, he's got his best roster at Texas that he's had so far, but it's going to be tested big time and going to be tested immediately. I mean, the turnaround after that UTRGV opener is playing Davidson in Asheville on Monday, November 30th. So it's going to get real really quickly. It's going to get real really quickly for everybody in college basketball. You're seeing a lot of these similar schedules around the country, even from these teams from these loaded conferences that have a gauntlet of the conference slate. They all tried to scramble to find games and find a few of those marquee matchups that they kind of had to navigate with COVID-19 and everything going on with those protocols and traveling and such. So less than 2 weeks away from the opening of the Texas basketball 2020-2021 season. Before we get into the roster and some notes from Shaka Smart's Zoom press conference earlier this week with the local media, Texas did announce its signing class Wednesday. They got all four of those guys in as expected. A solid four-man class, a well-rounded class. It lacks that star talent kind of guy, which Texas was hoping was going to be Damian Collins. Damian Collins, a five-star prospect from Atlanta, Texas, ranked number 10 overall in the Rivals.com rankings. Could end up actually moving up a little bit in those rankings. He's been really, really good during the spring and summer games that he's been able to get in. But a four-man class that I think checks some boxes for Texas. If they would have been able to land Damian Collins, I think it would have been a great class. Without him, I think it's a good class. I think it's a class that's probably going to add at least one transfer. But, you know, not to go off too much on a tangent here, we'll get to these guys in a second, but considering now that all college basketball players this season get an extra year of eligibility, this is basically a redshirt year for everybody if they want it, no matter how much or how little you play, I think it kind of complicates the recruiting picture a little bit, because initially I think Texas was going to take a massive class. And massive, I mean, maybe as much as seven guys when you consider all the seniors they have in their roster. Greg Brown likely being very, very likely being a one and done. Kai Jones being a guy that can make that jump to the NBA after his sophomore season. Who knows what happens with Andrew Jones? I think he's going to have an awesome year. Could he play himself into being ready for the NBA? He doesn't strike me as a guy that's running out the door. He even himself told me when I interviewed him a couple weeks ago for a story at orangebloods.com that he doesn't know what it takes yet to get to the NBA, which is, you know, it's amazing how perspective can change when the things that he's gone through. But I think he's good enough to potentially play himself into having that decision to make. But now that you could potentially get some guys back that maybe you thought you would have lost, I mean, who knows? You know, I'm not going to speculate about names, but I'm sure it's nice for those guys to have an option to return. You know, Shaka Smart brought up Jace Febrish's situation, who hasn't been cleared yet to fully participate in practice coming back from that microfracture surgery. We know that's a hell of a procedure. It's a tough one to come back from, that knee procedure. But now, you know, as Shaka said, hey, he knows he doesn't have to necessarily rush himself back onto the floor when he's not ready. And the coaches don't have to try to rush him as well, because if he wants, he does have that option to return in the program. Even if he comes back in the first third of the year, the back third of the year, middle of the season, it doesn't matter. He has that opportunity to return to Texas and keep that eligibility. So I think that complicates the recruiting picture some. I'm still confident that Texas is going to go out and get at least one transfer. But are they going to sign the massive class that they originally planned on signing? I'm not quite sure. I think that's something they're going to have to figure out as the season winds down and eventually ends. Who could potentially come back? Would there be any transfer type things or how that all would work? But the four-man signing class, I think the headliner to me is probably Tamar Bates, a guard from the Kansas City area who actually plays. He transferred to IMG Academy for his senior year. This was a huge get for Texas. This is a guy that was basically in Kansas's backyard, a guy that Kansas wanted, a guy that early on in the recruiting process, everybody was projecting him to Kansas because Kansas usually gets those guys. And I think Shaka Smart did a heck of a job recruiting him. I think it was a nice little parting gift from Jay Lucas before he left to go to Kentucky to become an assistant coach there. Well, first off, it was a basically special assistant to the coach, recruiting coordinator kind of guy. And then within like a month and a half, he was bumped up to assistant coach because they wanted him on the road recruiting. But Lucas did help Texas secure that commitment from Tamar Bates. And Tamar flat out said, you know, with everything going on in the world, he wanted to play for an African-American coach. And Shaka Smart was a guy they had a lot of great conversations with beyond basketball. That was kind of a theme with a lot of these commitments. Amarion Ellis said the same thing. It wasn't even really about the basketball with Shaka Smart. It was about the life conversations. But Tamar Bates, to me, is probably the headliner of this class. Great competitor. He just oozes leadership intangibles. You can see it when you watch him play. They played a couple of national TV games recently. He's a talker, he's competitive, he's confident, he doesn't back down, but at the same time, he's a really, really good team player. I mean, he is one of those guys that is going to make the best play for his basketball team. If that's him, you know, taking a mid-range shot or an open three, he's going to do it. If that's him driving the lane, dishing the ball off, he's going to do it. If that's him, you know, inviting the challenge of guarding the team's best player, which he did for IMG Academy in those games, that's what he's going to do. You know, Eric Bossy, who I had on the podcast last time, when we were talking about when Tamar Bates was a target, mentioned that he thought he was going to be an all Big 12 player. And I see it. I think that's a guy that people in the program could really rally around and kind of follow his voice and his lead. And that eventually he's going to be an all conference player. And I think he's probably the one most poised when he eventually arrives to Texas to be an instant impact guy, just because of the way he carries himself mentally. David Joplin, 6'7" forward. Shooting is the calling card. He can flat out shoot the basketball from anywhere. Catch and shoot, pull up, pick and pop, whatever it is, he's somebody that at the next level, college defenses are going to have to account for where he is on the floor, because he can really, really shoot the basketball. And that's something Texas wanted. And that forward four-man spot is a guy that could flat out shoot the basketball, and somebody that they could run offense from as well. I was kind of joking with somebody close to the program that, you know, hey, kind of sounds like a, you know, what Dylan Osakowski's role was supposed to be when he was recruited. And, you know, they made the remark that Dylan's really shooting the ball well in Germany's top league right now, is kind of to say, hey, this is what we thought he was going to be. I think people around the program think David Joplin is going to be a big time collegiate shooter, and one of those guys that could really help an offense in the future. And he's a skilled player too. I think as he gets into a college strength and conditioning program, his body's really going to change. A really solid get, a consensus top 100 prospect nationally. I think Rivals.com has him at 94 or 97. I think he's going to move up. He's one of those guys that I think would have exploded during the spring, summer AAU season if we had the normal evaluation time where an analyst can go out and see a bunch of guys. Another guy that fits that bill is Amarion Ellis from Iowa, a two-sport athlete. He's got some impressive football tape. Another very, very competitive guy, and a guy that was super under the radar. Very interesting background. He's had to overcome some things in his life. I think Texas fans are really, really going to like and appreciate Amarion when they learn more about him when he arrives to campus. But 6'4", I believe, is what he's listed at. He kind of reminds me of Cartier Diarra, who played at Kansas State last year. Can make an impact defensively, and one of those guys that's really hard to keep him out of the lane. Not a true point guard, but I think eventually he's going to be able to kind of handle that role in college down the road, perhaps when he's a junior or a senior. I think he'll start more in that off-the-ball combo guard type of role when he gets to Texas. But I think that this guy's got quite the ceiling. I think he's just starting to figure it out. From what I've seen and people I've talked to, I was really surprised he wasn't more of a high major prospect. And he's just another one of those guys that, you know, Texas was very aggressive with its evaluations and with its recruiting process, going after a lot of these guys that, you know, they started making connections with and talking with, and they checked all the right mental boxes, and they put on the tape and got some eyes on a lot of film and things like that. And they really liked these guys, and they made a move on them. And I think across the country, there were probably a lot of college programs that were pretty lazy in that regard. I don't think you've seen the typical types of recruiting classes that you typically see with the evaluation period. And Texas was super aggressive and went after its guys. And I think they beat a lot of programs to the punch. For all of these guys, with the exception of Bates for sure, maybe Joplin to an extent, because he was definitely a guy that in that Midwest Big Ten area was a priority target for some of those programs. And the guy that, it's been a long time since there was a commitment out of left field that I really wasn't fully anticipating, and Kia Nitajiri was that guy. It seems like forever ago when he committed to Texas. And he's a long-term play to me, but I think he's 6'9". He might be pushing 6'10 now. I haven't seen many guys that can move laterally and also can run the floor the way he does. He's really new to basketball still, and I know that's something that Texas doesn't shy away from, because they see a guy that's rapidly improving that quickly, even though he doesn't have the traditional background of a guy that's lived in the gym and played AAU basketball all his life. To see how quickly he's improved, you kind of project that forward and say, man, this guy's rapidly improving now. He's probably going to keep improving that quickly as he gets more reps in the jumping competition and things like that. But this is a guy with a fantastic motor, runs the floor terrifically, good athlete, maybe even a great athlete for his size, can really move his feet. I think he's going to be definitely a defensive contributor in college basketball. We'll see how the offensive game develops, but he's got some sneaky skill. It's the guy you put on the tape and talk to his coaches and things like that. He can knock down an open jump shot. You know, his high school coach wants him to shoot the three ball more this season. He can dunk. He can really, really jump. He can put the ball on the floor a little bit. But this is a guy that's really improving a lot, and I think it's a smart long-term play by Texas. Especially considering that if their front court projects the way I think it will in the near future, the following season, it's not going to be someone they're going to need to count on and say, hey, we got to have you play 20, 25 minutes right away. I think that would be asking too much of him. But man, athletically, he can really, really move for a guy his size. So a four-man class for Texas, I'm expecting they eventually add at least a transfer to that. But as I said earlier, with all these guys having another year of eligibility and basically having a redshirt year for this year, no matter how much they play, it kind of complicates the recruiting picture because you got to figure out what to do with the scholarship numbers and things like that. Switching gears to this upcoming season, this upcoming roster, Shaka Smart did meet with the media earlier this week on a Zoom press conference. I mentioned earlier that Jace Fabris, still not fully clear to participate in practice. It didn't sound like that was soon on the horizon, but I am assuming he's going to be cleared at some point this season. But Shaka Smart said that they're not counting on him to be ready for the season opener. But fortunately for Texas, other than what Shaka Smart described as just kind of your typical bumps and bruises in the preseason as you guys start going at each other in scrimmages and things like that, they haven't really had any injury issues. So as of right now, they're counting on all 12 of those guys to be ready to rock for the upcoming season. And speaking of 12, it's a super deep roster. I think, frankly, it's the roster that college coaches probably dream of having when you see the amount of veterans and talent and depth and versatility and, you know, throw in a potential one-and-done lottery pick at the perfect time with all those veteran guys. I think when Shaka Smart took the Texas job, he probably had visions of a team like this, a bunch of guards with a ton of experience, great athletes in the front court, some depth there. And a guy like Greg Brown, who might have been the best high school basketball player in Central Texas ever, who just conveniently slides into that four spot potentially for Texas, which is kind of the only place that they had a little bit of a question mark heading into the season. But as we know, you can't play 12 guys all the time. It's really hard at a high major program to have that deep of even a rotation where you're basically getting guys in there, you know, for what, 5-6 minutes, those into the rotation guys, because you know, you're having to play your better players so often. So I thought it was really the biggest takeaway for me from the Zoom conference with Shaka Smart is the way he discussed rotations, because it's something he was asked about a couple times, because, you know, I think it's, you know, it's the biggest question facing the program heading to this season is how many guys are going to play and who are going to be the guys that grab those majority minutes. Because looking back to last season, when Texas finished 5-1 and went on that winning streak where they had the, you know, just really, really impressive wins, going on the road to Texas Tech, beating West Virginia at home, the thrilling win at Oklahoma. I mean, their backs were against the wall after that blowout against Iowa State, and they responded by playing some of their best basketball of the season. But you still had guys that were out. You know, if Jericho Sims was healthy at that point in time, Jericho Sims was going to play. So it's not like, oh, Shaka Smart finally found the right rotation of guys. I think it just so happened that, hey, we have who we have. These guys know they're going to play. They know their roles. And they were able to go out and play really, really good basketball. And I think that's something that Shaka's probably thought a lot about heading into this season is, you know, he, among so many coaches, they always want guys to kind of fit their roles, play with confidence, kind of find that consistency. And it can be hard for guys sometimes when, you know, they might not play a game, or they play 5 minutes, or the next night it's 15 minutes, or the next night it's, you know, they've got to start and play 30 minutes. That can wear on guys a little bit. There can create some uncertainty where, am I going to play? You know, it's easy to tell guys, oh, I'm ready. You know, just call me when you need me. I'm ready to do what the coach asks. That's fine in theory, but it's tough sometimes for 18 to 22-year-old student athletes to go out and execute that. And what you saw during that winning streak for Texas, they only had a certain amount of guys that could play. They all knew that they were going to play. They all knew kind of what their role was, and they were able to go out and have success doing that. So Shaka himself mentioned that there's been times earlier in his coaching career where he's probably played too many guys, and he's probably spent too much time thinking about how player 9 in the rotation feels, how player 10 in the rotation feels, how player 11 in the rotation feels, and what's their mentality, and are they in the right mental mind frame, and you know, how much do I need to play those guys? As opposed to focusing on, hey, here's my core group of rotation players that's going to play a lot, and then I need to have my role guys. And from there, you know, if you got to call on some other guys in a pinch, you can, but that's who I'm going to roll with. And that's kind of the feel I got from Shaka Smart when he was talking about his roster. And he even said, look, we have a group of guys right now that are standing out, and we have another group of guys below there, and we've got to figure out, you know, who's going to emerge from that group, or what to do with that group of guys. And He said that, you know, the guy standing out, I wasn't surprised to hear that the guards were the first name out of his mouth. Matt Coleman, Courtney Ramey, Andrew Jones. We know those guys are going to play a lot. Frankly, I think that they should all three start. And I think that as a coach, sometimes you might want to stagger those guys a little bit, which is something Texas did last season. But I think all three should start and play together until proven otherwise. They all have kind of different skill sets. You know, Andrew Jones can really, really shoot the ball. From the outside, it's funny. Every preseason, Shaka Smart is asked by Austin American Statesman, calling this Kirk Bowles, hey, do you have any shooters on the roster? Because we know shooting's been a very popular topic among the Texas fan base and the Texas media with Shaka Smart. And he immediately mentioned Andrew Jones. Like, every time Andrew Jones is open, we want him to shoot the basketball. So Andrew Jones is going to have the neon green light. Now, the offense isn't going to be Andrew Jones shoot it 25 times a game. But I think it's obvious that Shaka Smart thinks he's going to be the best shooter on the roster. Whereas, you know, Matt Coleman is kind of more of that distributor type guy, but he shot the basketball well from beyond the arc last season. Courtney Ramey, kind of that true combo type guy that just can do a little bit of everything. A bucket getter, can get to the paint, that sort of thing. So they're kind of all unique in their ways. We'll see if they all start together, but I think it's obvious that those three guys are going to determine what happens to Texas season this year. So I wasn't surprised to hear Shaka Smart name those guys right away. And then he mentioned Jericho Sims too, who Greg Brown, otherwise known as the marketing director of Texas basketball, because he's tweeting pictures and stuff every single day. I love it. I love it because he gives a glimpse into what practice is like with some of the photos and things like that. But he had one the other day of him, of Jericho Sims. And Jericho Sims has definitely spent some time in the weight room, especially the upper body, with strength and conditioning coach Andrea Hoodie. Because he's added some muscle, and Shaka Smart noted that he's playing really well right now in practice. And then he mentioned the guy from kind of a mental approach standpoint that's probably made the biggest jump heading from where last season ended heading into this season, is Kai Jones. And Kai Jones has the ability to kind of have that sophomore season where he could jump to the NBA. Now, that's been a little bit of an issue at times at Texas, where you have guys that have a freshman season, and they kind of maybe look forward towards the NBA a little bit, and they don't have the sophomore season many are expecting. But I think all of those guys were guards, you know, for the most part. Your Eric Davises of the world, and players like that. So, and it's not like Kai Jones is coming off of a monstrously awesome freshman season where he played 35 minutes a night and just filled the stat sheet. He had his moments, but he definitely will play more minutes, I think, this season. And you throw in Greg Brown, obviously, into that mix as well. And that's six guys right there. And I think that's probably where you start with the main rotation, is those six guys. And I think there's a tier below of guys that are kind of fighting for those role player type positions, or, you know, how they're going to fit into the rotation. One guy that a source did mention to me last week, or might have been 2 weeks ago, was Royce Hamm Jr., a guy that has kind of was turning some heads because he was, you know, really accepting his role and just kind of embracing what he needs to do to help the team, and just not even worrying about scoring or things like that. And it was impressing some people. And we know Royce and Brock Cunningham both ended last season on the high note, those high energy, physical, tough, do whatever it takes to help the team kind of guys that can score the basketball a little bit too. They were a huge part of Texas' success to end the season. I just find it hard to believe that both of those two guys won't be dependable role players for this team that Texas needs to play night in and night out. And, you know, when Texas was getting its ass kicked last year by physical teams, you know, Georgetown and Providence, I was scratching my head because those guys weren't playing enough. Brock Cunningham wasn't even playing. And it's just like, man, you're getting whipped by these teams that are just more physical than you, especially on the glass. And you've got these two guys, so that's what they do. And then eventually they just kind of were thrust into the lineup, and they thrived helping Texas to that 5-1 finish. So I'd be surprised if those guys aren't in the mix as rotational role players. And then what happens from there, I'm not quite sure. It's going to be tough because I think Texas ideally, just the way Shaka Smart was talking, I don't think the rotation is going to go, the main rotation is going to go beyond nine guys. You know, there's probably going to be some nights where they might only play eight. And that's just, it's kind of the nature of high major, really good college basketball, is there's many of these programs that get really, really good rosters and they don't play a ton of guys. And I think if you looked at some of these teams, like, like Duke in recent years and things like that. It's like they basically play six guys, and then they play a couple other guys sparingly when they need to for foul trouble or roles or matchups or whatever it is. So that was the biggest takeaway for me, is that Texas has 12 scholarship guys, talented guys, guys that could presumably start, and nobody would kind of raise their eyebrows. But I think Shaka Smart knows in order for Texas to be successful this season, they don't have the luxury to have that enormously long non-conference slate where they can kind of try to develop guys and figure out the best mix heading into Big 12 play. They got to play their best players, and then they got to figure out who can be our role guys to help those best players. And I think, make no mistake, the guards are the best players. Jericho Sims, when he's right, sounds like Kai Jones is in that mix as well. And we know Greg Brown III is going to play a ton of minutes for the Longhorns this season. On the news and notes side, to just give you an idea of kind of the national perception of Texas, I think it aligns with what my perception is, or my prediction right now for this team heading into the season. I guess, you know, how Texas fans feel if they're not completely out on Shaka Smart after his first five seasons at Texas. I would describe it as cautious optimism, or like a baby buy type thing. I think, you know, national analysts and in the media and coaches around the country are kind of dipping their toes in the water at the deep end with Texas a little bit, and they're kind of ready to jump in. But they're not ready to fully commit, because I think if you just looked at this roster on paper and you just didn't really put it in the context of the previous seasons or anything like that, I think you'd probably put this roster at least in the preseason top 10 of the national polls. But I think Texas being number 19 in the AP and number 22 in the USA Today coaches poll kind of speaks to the okay, people like, okay, We understand you've got a lot of talent coming back. You've got a ton of experience coming back, but we haven't seen you really win at a high level yet during your first seasons at Texas. So I think people are in the wait and see approach with Shaka Smart this season, but they are acknowledging that, hey, he's got the roster to make some major noise in the Big 12 and in the national picture. Speaking of the Big 12, Texas was predicted to finish fourth in the league in the preseason poll. Not really surprising. That's actually where I had Texas when I sent a projection into The Athletic. CJ Moore kind of compiled an unofficial media poll for the Big 12 Conference basketball season, and that's where I had the Longhorns at, was fourth. And fourth this year would probably be good enough for like a number three seed in the NCAA tournament, because the league is just, I've never seen it as strong at the top as it is this season. I mean, it is just absolutely loaded. And this is something I'm going to get to on my next Drop and Dimes podcast, because I think it deserves its own podcast just to kind of explain, because I think it's something that as more Texas fans turn to basketball, they're going to be like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Is what the computers think of Texas. Now, there are two main computer projections, predictive systems for college basketball, at least that I pay attention to. One is the very, very well-known KenPom.com. And the second one is BartTorvik.com. They're pretty similar. I think that, you know, Torvik does explain on his website where he has his differences at. And they align on a vast majority of teams, but there are some ones that they're totally different on. And KenPom.com projects Texas right now to be the number 9 team in the country. 9. Yes, that's right. 9th. Torvik's got them even higher. BartTorvik has them projected right now to be the number 1 team in the country. And exchanging some messages with him a few months ago, basically his computer system has never seen a roster return this many consensus top 100 recruits that are actually experienced. I mean, Texas is the only team in the country that I can tell, based on this table right here on his website, that returns its entire minutes from last year. Nobody else is going to do that in college basketball. And that's remarkable. There are 357 Division I college basketball teams. Texas, according to BartTorvik.com, is the only one bringing back 100% of its minutes from last season. 100% of minutes of guys that are, you know, really high recruits coming out of high school, guys that, you know, many of them have played a lot of basketball in their career. And I think that's why you're seeing these projections so high for Texas. I think the biggest difference between KenPom.com and BartTorvik is KenPom is probably fairly so, not as high on Texas offensively after its efficiency issues last season. Very, very high on its defense, whereas Torvik sees a dramatic improvement for Texas offensively. It actually has the Texas offense and defense both projected to be top five groups in college basketball. But its season record projection is 18-7 at Torvik, and you're probably saying, wait, how? They're number one projected team in the country. It's because on Torvik's list, West Virginia is second, Baylor's fifth, Texas Tech is sixth, and Kansas is 12th. That's half the league. You know, you go look at KenPom.com, Baylor first, Kansas fifth, Texas Tech sixth, West Virginia eighth, Texas ninth. I mean, that's incredible. Again, that's half the league inside the top nine overall teams in the country. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how insanely loaded this league is at the top this year. And then keep in mind, Oklahoma, pretty good basketball team. Bringing back a lot of guys from a pretty solid team last year. Then Oklahoma State has Cade Cunningham, number one overall recruit in the country, a guy that I'm extremely high on after seeing him a few times throughout his years in AAU basketball. So that's kind of like the middle, like the late middle of the pack of the league is Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, two, you know, potential top 40, maybe even top 30 type of basketball teams. So the Big 12 is going to be brutal. And then from the player side too, I think kind of a funny wrinkle in all this from the projection standpoint is Texas led the Big 12 and the amount of guys on the preseason all-conference team. Now, they do one, like, first team, which strangely includes six players. They say it was to break a tie, but whatever. Matt Coleman actually made that list. He was the first Texas player to make the All-Big 12 first team in the preseason since Isaiah Taylor back in Shaka Smart's first season, 2015-2016. And Isaiah Taylor actually ended the year on that same team as well. But Matt Coleman's the first guy since then to make that preseason list. And then honorable mention, Greg Brown. The third was included, Courtney Ramey and Jericho Sims. And I think you can make a really good case that Andrew Jones belonged on that list. But regardless, Texas led the way with four preseason all-conference team selections, which I'm not sure when the last time that happened was. But just it kind of puts in perspective that there's a lot of coaches that think this is a really, really good roster. And I'm anxious to see what it looks like when those games start here in less than 2 weeks. And if you know me, we can't finish a basketball podcast without talking about what in the hell is going on with the Houston Rockets. I know there's a lot of Rockets fans that listen. I know there's a lot of Mavs fans that listen. I know there's some Spurs fans that listen. I know OrangeBloods.com is a war zone during the NBA playoffs, especially when two Texas teams match up in the playoffs. So I know it's a pretty popular topic. It's probably the topic right now in the NBA offseason, which is saying something because the NBA offseason is typically very, very crazy. The craziest offseason by far compared to the major American professional sports. And there's been reports that Russell Westbrook wants out, Russell Westbrook and James Harden want out. Just saw Daryl Morey leave the Rockets to go take a job with the Philadelphia 76ers. Mike D'Antoni just left, and he's going to be an assistant coach in Brooklyn for Steve Nash. And I think the Rockets would have taken D'Antoni back. It's a mess. It is a gigantic mess, and the reporting's kind of all over the place, which is typical this time because you've got the agents that want things out there. You got the players that want things out there. You got the front office. You got the coaches. I mean, there's all sort of angles, and it's never a coincidence sometimes when you see, I think, these agent planted stories about, you know, my guy wants out. I think that's probably what's happening with Russell Westbrook right now. Like, at this point, I'm not expecting Russell Westbrook to be a Houston Rocket much longer. But I don't know if that's because he's upset with the direction. I mean, direction is kind of a broad term. Like, what do you mean by direction? Because the Rockets just hired a new coach that you were apparently in on. Well, depending where you read the Westbrook and Harden went, Tyronn Lue, but they're on board with Steven Silas. So, whatever. Okay, you got a new coach. You're getting a new general manager. You got a relatively new owner. So what exactly change are you looking for? Then you see some reporting in The Athletic from a couple of writers. And it's basically like James Harden is the issue, which it's hard not to believe that, considering that every other big-time player that James Harden's played with the Rockets has left kind of after a confrontation. You know, Chris Paul, the most recent one, Dwight Howard before that, and then now potentially Russell Westbrook as well. So maybe this is just a James Harden thing, and maybe that's just where the Rockets are going to be. But there's even been reports, you know, conflicting reports that he wants out, but, you know, The Athletic reported that he's locked in, he's ready to play for the Rockets, but is it one of those scenarios where he would play, but doesn't really love what's going on? I don't know. I just know that they are by far the biggest headache in the NBA, and it's difficult as a Rockets fan to look at this situation and think that James Harden's going to win championship there. There's just so many things going on that are just negative, you know, and it kind of, I think, boils over to the court sometimes. And let's be honest, too, about both these guys. If they would have played better in the playoffs, I'm not sure if we're having this conversation. And mainly Russell Westbrook. I mean, he flat out was awful in some games. And James Harden was James Harden. He had some really bright moments, including on defense, but he also had some games that he disappears in the playoffs. And that's who he is. You know, that's style of game and that personality. It's just going to disappear sometimes in a playoff. But it's frustrating. And then there's the owner element, a guy that they, let's just say, a not really great reputation from people that have come in contact with him. So, but at the same time, I think he's a guy that wants to spend money and wants to win, but I think he really rubs people the wrong way. And is he just trying to set this thing up to be a family business type thing? I'm not sure, but I think the Rockets are heading towards a rebuild, or they're heading back towards basketball purgatory, where you're good enough to get into the one of those final playoff spots, but you're not good enough to win an NBA championship. You're not good enough to compete realistically to get to the Western Conference Finals. You're kind of just holding on and hoping for a break that falls in your lap, and maybe you can make a run, or maybe you can get that great player, or maybe you can find that great trade or that great draft pick. But yeah, you know, Daryl Morey left quickly and took another job. Mike D'Antoni left and became an assistant coach. Now Russell Westbrook wants out. Whew. I think watching the Houston Rockets next season is probably going to require a lot of beer. A lot of beer, maybe even some stronger stuff as well. But I'm sure Mavs fans are just rejoicing at this news because, hey, they're sitting pretty right now with this roster. And, you know, the Spurs are going through their own changes and things like that. But, hey, when you win as many championships as they've done recently, I think they can handle a couple years where they're not really that great. So, yeah. Life as a Rockets fan, it's tough. It's tough. James Harden might be the most skilled, best scorer in the world, but is he ever going to win a championship in Houston? This latest wrinkle really makes me question him even more, and makes me question this new ownership group as well, which doesn't give me warm and fuzzies about the future of the Houston Rockets. So let's wrap that podcast up on a very, very high note. For you Houston Rockets fans, I'm sure it was a high note for you Mavs and Spurs fans. And with that, we are done with episode 50 of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. Thank you for tuning in. These are going to be more frequent in the future, assuming, fingers crossed, we get a full college basketball season and this thing isn't just derailed by COVID-19 issues. I'm trying not to be pessimistic. I'm trying to be, you know, positive about the future, but man, it's an indoor sport with guys close together. I just don't know. It's a lot to ask student athletes to not be student athletes in college and go out. I mean, it's not a coincidence that right after Halloween, a couple of weeks later, you see all these positive tests in college football. Wonder why? Because Halloween time for college kids is one of the best, most magical times of the year when you go to some of those parties. And you see what some of those women are wearing. Okay, I've said enough already. Let's wrap this thing up. You can follow me on Twitter at DemonComusOB. Get to orangewoods.com. Check out all of our great Longhorns coverage. Get to theyak.com. Check out all of our great podcasts. Make sure you're following The Yak on Twitter for anytime you get in. We'll tweet out a podcast anytime it's published. Download the Yak app. You get alerts whenever a podcast is done on there as well. And yeah, less than 2 weeks away to tip off for what I think is going to be a really exciting and potentially finally for Jacques Smart, the breakthrough season, because he's got the roster to do it. But man, that league is going to challenge him. So until I talk to y'all next time, stay safe, wear a mask, and take care.